Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
You also need, when they give you this diploma, whatever it is you're going to handle, you need a lab coat. Absolutely. You need to turn in the cape that you wore for the better part of the 20th century.
I have a cape.
Yes, you still have it?
I have a cape at home, and it has a brass lions on either side of the chin.
You need to trade it in for a white lab coat with some brass stethoscopes on the side. So and you need to walk around for the rest of your life with your arms at 90 degrees up in the air like
Nurse,
they're about to be
rocked. Scrub.
Yeah.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
Alrighty then, plausibly live and from a yet-to-be-disclosed location. I am Michael Kornheiser, and I'm joined today by big-time Gary Braun and Chris Saliza. Nigel will be running the board and doing news, and either wearing a lab coat or a cape. We will have Tony Kornheiser joining us in a moment in the open, and we look forward to having Steve Sands in news.
Pablo's laugh in that cracks me up.
Yeah.
I mean, just that's
it
good,
was
good
so
shows.
Great to see Tony with those guys. I mean, he was like 20 years younger.
What are you saying about us?
Man, he really likes those guys.
Yeah, imagine.
Like, he said it like four times.
Imagine you're his son and you hear the genuine joy in his voice coming through your iPhone.
It's not like you guys. He likes them.
Yes, well, that's accurate.
Yeah. Thanks, Nigel.
All right, we are joined by Tony Kornheiser, who is still up in New York City, ready to come on back down to D.C. You are probably very happy right now that you were not in studio with us as we are having computer problems. And... you teased yesterday your anger. Do you want to go back into that, or are you done with the studio from yesterday?
What, the anger of the New York studio?
The New York studio,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, you mentioned it, but you never talked
about
it.
Yeah, you said you were enraged.
Let me explain what it was. So, yeah, you know what? I didn't get to it, and the reason I didn't get to it was I was really having a good time with Reale and Pablo, so I forgot it. And the food was good. They had the decaf. They had the lox. I was happy about that.
Good bagels?
Yeah, well, not, you know what?
New York-style bagels?
New York... They were really inadequate. I was very surprised. They were bad.
Wow.
And they were, you know, and if you have bad bagels in New York, they're really bad. Anyway, we walk into the studio. So we're going to do the show. We're going to start the show a little bit late. We're going to start around 9, and I walk in about 8:30, and I see this beautiful expanse of a studio. And it's, I mean, it's really big. And it's got some... Like, it's got a guitar at one point, so it looked like it might have been a recording studio. It's got lovely couches and chairs.
Nicely appointed.
Yeah, it's really nice. I mean, Nigel was there, and
yes.
I look at him, and I go, oh, this is pretty nice, and he gives me, he shakes his head.
Not this, not for you.
Not that one.
Yeah, why would you think that was for you? It's not like your name's on a show.
You're in the bathroom.
Or, I mean, beats him saying, yeah, it is nice. Want to see yours?
Yeah, and then he says, you're over there, and over there to the left of where he is a very, very, very small space that is apparently just used for voice recording. And there's a table in there with three microphones, and there is no room. You can't open the door. If you open the door, you're going to hit one of the three people, and there's the table where the microphones sit. There's no room, for example, for... in my case, I use a notebook, and if somebody else uses a laptop, it's literally now going to be a laptop. It is on your lap, and I go crazy. I go, what? I'm not. This is a joke. I'm not getting in there. And I got angrier and angrier and angrier, and attacked everybody at Digital Media, and even attacked somebody who didn't work at Digital Media.
Someone walking by, random passerby.
Yeah, I just explained this is completely inadequate, and we can't do the show there. And then I sat down, and we did the show. It was fine.
The show was great. Now, are you aware that Reale took photos and shared them on Instagram and Twitter?
It's not that I'm aware that Reale takes photos of me in particular or what we were doing. Reale is Martin Scorsese as a young boy.
Well,
he takes photographs of everything all the time. He is constantly raising his right arm up in the air, holding some sort of device, and everybody around him then becomes, you know, they're on tape all the time. That's Reale, and everybody who knows him is used to it. He has so much energy all the time. It's just amazing. And Reale's fabulous. When he was at PTI last week, it made it so much easier. I mean, we had Jay Williams in, and he'd never done it before. and reality becomes just such a great crutch to lean on. He's just great. So I guess he was doing that. I mean, I wasn't aware of it, but I wasn't unaware of it because it's what he always does.
The photos of you with Tony Reale and Pablo Torre, this is the closest I've seen you to any other person, including family. You were literally on top of each other.
Well, we were in a room,
like
the
exchanging
size of a
kisses
closet.
And stuff.
They were leaning on you. You don't normally let people touch you.
Yeah. Well, you know, they had to sign a waiver.
I will say this as a fan. Yesterday's show was one of the more enjoyable shows I've listened to in a long time. And I know one of your biggest fears is being on air or on camera with those who you deem to be too young to be in the room with you. And
yeah.
I found it really interesting to hear three very successful people talk about where their careers really took off and where they started to veer from the intended paths, particularly with Reale, who had the background in broadcasting and did a great imitation of a little kid Reale trying to do Yankees games.
And then also
Pablo Torre, who has this background in print and is now going into a medium where he's doing, you know, essentially fart jokes on Libertard's radio show half the week. So it was just a really good listen. And I think you need to put these fears aside that you with these younger voices is disconcerting or foreign to your audience.
Well, I mean, I think that the key word there, what you said, is voices. I mean, if I'm in a medium where I don't think it's visual and I think it's audio, then I don't have any fear about that because I find them smart and entertaining and I like them both very much. And I can talk to anybody. My great fear is being on camera with somebody 30, 35, even 40 years younger than I am and people saying, get Grandpa into the home, get him off the air.
We're working on that.
Yeah, I know.
Hey, well, how do you know they wouldn't say get Junior on the playground? Get him out of there with that man. Why is that little boy in there with that man?
Yeah, because, that's not the way I think. But yeah, you're probably right. That's a 50-50 shot. Yeah.
Hey, Tone, can you tell Pablo I liked his sweater?
Did you?
Yeah, that's a good-looking sweater. I'm looking at it right there. Reale looks good. I'm looking at the picture. He did like a foreground background.
Well,
he does.
He makes sort of like this selfie face that my 15-year-old girl makes, though. That
Who, Reale?
Yeah.
I like that.
You have to hold the camera just above your forehead angle to
so
try
you
and
don't
get the
look,
right angle.
So your face doesn't look fat.
Yeah.
Well, not my face.
That's not a problem for Reale. He's not going to look fat.
No, yeah. He weighs nothing. I like Pablo's sweater.
And then,
of course, you guys will appreciate this, particularly Chris, because of Chris's body imaging problems all the time.
Yes, true.
Between
don't
them,
reveal that.
No pounds of body fat.
Yeah, Reale weighs like zero. What do you think Reale weighs? How tall is he?
165.
I don't know how tall he is. He's 6 foot.
He's 5'7", 158.
Oh, he's not
tall.
Reale
he's strong.
About 5'11".
5'11", he said.
And I don't think at this point in his life he weighs more than 155.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think
does
Pablo
he work out?
Less.
Do you think?
They're really
two or three times a day.
Reale works out a lot? A
lot of arm
days. Yeah, Reale does a lot of working out. Reale
he looks it.
No body fat. But the problem with having no body fat is when you do something totally idiotic like Reale will do, which is have sushi at an airport in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I mean, what are you
doing? You're immediately
in
the hospital.
They're known for their sushi, actually.
Airport sushi.
Yeah. So.
Huh. And how did last night go?
Last night was one of the weirdest experiences of my life. Last night, these are the Penn Awards, and I used to think that Penn stood for something, but now I just think it stands for Penn.
A big
Penn. I'm not sure. And for reasons utterly unknown to me, these are serious literary awards, but very, very political. The people who won the awards, I mean, the people who won the awards were very, very young, very, very diverse, made very, very political speeches. And there were awards for things like poetry and translations and books that are just honestly, they're not best-selling books. They're not accessible in that way. It'd be great if they were, but they're very niche-oriented books. And how sports got in there, why ESPN got in there, was unfathomable to me. I mean, I went up there and I had, you know, you say this as a performer, I wrote this. I know I had really good material if my audience were people who knew anything about sports or sports writing or Bill Knack or the travails of trying to get something in on a deadline. If they were newspaper people, I would have crushed. I mean, honestly,
this is A material, people.
And what happened was that nobody had any idea who I was. I had to introduce myself. I came after Jeremy Schapp, who had to introduce himself. We were this sort of very odd small group of two awards in the middle of a much larger ocean of people that were not paying attention to this type of category. So, I mean, I may as well have been working in, you know, Japan.
I'm looking at them now. There's 40-some awards, it looks like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, and I probably did about 4 minutes, and I probably rushed through it a little bit. When I was hitting lines that were just getting medium reactions that I knew, honestly, if I did this thing before, if I spoke at the Pulitzer Prize for newspapers luncheon, I'd have crushed.
Well, the preview you gave yesterday during the show was hysterical, I thought.
Yeah, well, you guys laughed. The amount of laughter in the studio from two people was greater than the amount
but we
of
think, like, yeah, because that's it's material we would think is funny. I mean, like, it's not necessarily a Penn Literary Awards bit. Yeah.
Did you not do the bit on Ovaltine that I wrote for
that
you?
What's the deal with Ovaltine? Is it the one that starts with
Ovaltine? Right, yeah, because it's round, right? You
know. So why did not...
A lot of Hemingway jokes.
Nigel should have stayed in New York with you to give you a nice open. This seems like you were set up to fail if you had to introduce yourself.
I don't think I failed. I just don't think that... I mean, I think if people walked out, they would say, well, who is that guy? What was he talking about? It just did not fit. I mean, if you were a cook and you made this fabulous steak and then somebody dropped whipped cream on it, you say, what are you doing?
Yeah.
So it just
yeah, it could be the best whipped cream in the world, but it's still not going to work. Yeah.
Yeah, so I got out of there. You know, I got out and I didn't even go to the celebratory dinner. I just ended up in some Irish bar eating fish and chips like I always
do. Did you
go to New York to get fish and chips, which you can get at Chad's?
He loves the Chad's fish and chips.
Well,
so he's
I
on the record.
It was late. In other words, the event 8:30? Started at 6:30 and didn't get over till about 8:45, and I'm all the way downtown, and I know I've got to get back up to 42nd Street to the hotel, and I didn't want to commit then. Interestingly enough, they were having the dinner at Rosa Mexicana, which has a couple of restaurants in Washington.
Right by Verizon Center.
Right, and Michael can tell you this. Not only do I loathe avocado in all forms, but I don't really like to look at anybody else eating it. And that's
even with
their
ginger
guacamole
in it?
Is their specialty de la maison.
They'll make it at your table. Oh yeah.
Yeah. So
Tony, did you meet any of the authors who were there, or was it an in and out, a drive by type situation?
No. You sit down. I mean, everybody has his own seat. There were two people there who I really admired. I'm gonna get the guy who won the big prize is he's a Libyan author, and his first name is like Hisham, H-I-S-H-A-M.
We're looking.
And he wrote a memoir about his father, who was kidnapped by Gaddafi and made to disappear, and trying to get back into Libya after the Gaddafi reign of terror, and writing a book about his father. And it just sounded really moving and really personal. And his particular speech, and he had prepared, and you should prepare as if you're going to win. Don't go up there and say, oh, you know, I got nothing here. You're in a category of five people, and you have a chance to win. And his remarks were very tempered and very, not so much personal as meaningful to everybody there. So I went over to him.
You were right. It's called The Return.
Okay.
His name is Hisham Matar, M-A-T-A-R. Okay.
I went over to him and shook his hand, and again, he looked at me as if I were a bellhop. You know, he had no idea who I was.
No one there came up to you and said, hey.
I was unknown.
What?
Unknown. Wow. Unknown. Nobody, I'm telling you, it was like... You know, it's the great comedic thing that Adam will talk about. I'm working a bunch of Japanese tourists here. They don't speak English. So nobody had any idea. Nobody. Zero people knew who I was, which that didn't bother me. But, my congratulatory handshake to this guy probably meant nothing, although everybody likes to be congratulated. And I was also very impressed.
Like Nigel at Brockmeyer.
The guy who whose book became the basis for the screenplay and the movie Moonlight, and I believe he won Best Original or Best Adapted Screenplay, he was there, and he won an award, and he gave a little speech about being in the middle of his career, and he gave back all the money that he won to a scholarship in his name, and I was very impressed by him, and I'm forgetting, I think his first name is Tyrell, and he's got three names, and I don't know any more than that, and Chris, you could look that up.
We can look it up.
But here's the best thing. So I introduced Knack, Bill Knack, for the Lifetime Award, and I think I should have been, I mean, I really should have done better than I did. And Knack comes up and does pretty well, too. And afterwards, Knack comes over to me, and Knack says, excuse me, was there a check for me? And I go, what are you talking about? And he said, well, there's a prize. There's some money in this. I said, oh, I don't know. And then I walk over to where my seat was, and I had been handed an envelope and instructed to mention the judges and read from the judges' determination as to why they had Knack. And I didn't have my glasses with me, and I just said, I'm not going to do this. Forget it. I got my own seat here. You know. And so I left the entire envelope by my chair, and it was a check in it. And I said, oh, is this it? And Knack said, yeah. So Knack almost walked away empty-handed, and anybody cleaning the room could have cashed that check. And it might be for a lot of money. It might be.
Your Moonlight Boy, by the way, is Terrell Alvin McCraney.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, very impressive.
You didn't
miss it. And everybody, there was one woman, she won for a poetry prize, and she did something that was amazing to me.
Natalie Centers Sapico?
Yeah.
The award for poetry?
Yeah. So she gets up and she's going to read a poem. And I should tell you that the poem is it was a little tough for me because one of the lines in it is about how this particularly poor person is eating the ice from a urinal. And like you hear that and you go, am I on the moon
here?
Get
your attention.
What are we talking about here? Anyway, she gets up to read and she brings out a guy who plays violin.
Oh, cool.
It was really cool.
Yeah.
I mean, it was
cool.
Really like, wow, look at this. And so what I was going to do when I went up there, I was going to just look at the audience and say, hey, is the guy with the violin here? Because I could use some of that.
Yeah.
The guy who was doing
They did do it as the Titanic went down, so it would have made sense.
Right.
Well, it felt like that, believe me, halfway through. The guy who was doing the MC work, he made a reference to him also, so it was a dead reference to me. But I was thinking. I was trying.
Well, you'll try and do better the next time, like you always say.
I will try and do better the next time. How's the show going without me?
It's been great.
Well,
it hasn't. Without you, it's been very short. Without you,
yeah,
because we just started. You're the open.
It's been very comfortable so far. Only a few tech issues, so we are happy you're not here for that.
Nigel's
It's a little light on rage this morning.
Nigel's computer has been rebooting for the last 6.5 hours, but other than that, it's great.
It's the one that says, "Sit down. This will take a while."
Yeah.
Wait, didn't we have that?
Yeah,
happens all the time.
We were told we'd never have that again.
Well, we had it on one computer.
It's almost like they scheduled these updates.
Yeah.
So that's terrible. Have you called Sean?
No,
we called him a lot of things.
So Sean was there yesterday, and Sean felt the sting of the lash by me.
Yeah.
About the size of the studio. And he said, well, I told you there's a bigger studio on West 78th Street.
And he said, I'm not going up there.
I told you I didn't want to go up there.
Yeah, you have issues with the West Side.
Come on. 78th Street.
Yeah. I mean, where do you stay? What's the closest hotel? The closest hotel is a Trump hotel right on the corner of the park.
It's beautiful.
62nd.
It's big,
gorgeous.
Big league.
Huge.
Yeah, very bigly.
So you're coming home later today?
I plan to. I hope everything goes well.
Safe travels, my friend.
All right, talk to you all.
Will you bring home a rye bread?
Huh? Do you want a rye bread from Zarrow's?
Yeah, bring back a rye bread. Get it sliced.
All right, I'll bring back a seeded rye.
All right, bye,
very
Dad.
Nice.
Bye, Tony.
Bye. See you, Tony.
We'll take a quick break and come back with Steve Sands to talk about the recent WGC and the play of Dustin Johnson.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find qualified and quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites, and now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 200-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll in to ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by Fortune 100 companies and thousands of small and medium-sized businesses. And right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/Tony. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Tony. One more time to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/Tony.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
All right, this is Mash the Controller with their song Atomize. They are playing in Steve Sands from the Golf Channel, who is joining us after spending a very busy week at the WGC down in Austin, Texas. And I have a few questions to start with Dustin Johnson's play, but we can take this in a few different directions heading out into the year's first major. So, Steve, just how good is Dustin Johnson right now? What are you seeing for yourself and or hearing from players about his maturation over the last year and a half or so?
Oh, he is dialed in completely. His driving is the best in the world. I think that, you know, Sergio Garcia, Rory McIlroy, Dustin Johnson, probably the three best drivers of the golf ball. I think Dustin is the best of those three because he not only has the power, but he has the accuracy that he did not have, say, a couple of years ago. So that it starts on the tee. His wedge game has become top five, top ten in the world. It used to be a deficiency for him, but now he's been working on it so hard in the last couple of years that now all of a sudden his wedge game is right up there with anybody in the world. The putting can kind of come and go, but at some point, a golfer is going to have a trouble spot somewhere. When he's hot, I mean, look out. He's going to make a lot. He made a lot of putts last week, Michael, in Austin. It was amazing to watch. And then the big thing for him is off the golf course. He's changed his life. He's changed his lifestyle. He's double workouts every day, very disciplined. He's not going out and partying and doing that kind of thing. He's just incredibly disciplined, incredibly focused. He has his fiance Paulina. She's pregnant with their second child. You may or may not have seen Tatum running around the green on Sunday in Austin. So
great hair.
He's got it working. Yes, he does, exactly. I'm very jealous. He has it working on and off the golf course and is as focused as anybody out there on the PGA Tour without question.
I love that you start with the driving. I think that's the easiest piece for all of us to see. And for those who are a little less familiar with his game, he made a switch to about a 7-yard cut, right when he got to this upswing in his game. And that is just such a powerful advantage when you just have the natural length that he has. And he's now taking driver on some of these holes where other players are actually clubbing down to a 3-wood or even into a hybrid driving iron situation just because that cut is so consistent. I agree with you, Steve. I think this interest and this attention to big data has been so interesting to watch for him. If you watch Dustin Johnson before any round now, you're going to see the little track man right in line with him down the line. And you see all of these partial wedge shots. If you watch the broadcast, they were sort of poking fun at what his half swing does now with a 60. But if you look at the advantage he's now gained with those partial wedge shots, that's where you can really see him take advantage of just that brilliant length off the tee. And I do think the putting is going to be that piece that can hold him back. But you saw this week where the greens were just rolling so true and pure. When that's on, particularly with this new stable putter, he can be really, really effective. So,
there's a few things about it. One is when a player, I've always I'm curious whether it's golf or any other sport, when a player is great or has the potential to be great, and what's the deficiency in that person's game? Because no player is perfect. So if you take a guy like Vijay Singh, who was an incredible ball striker, but his putting would hold him back when he didn't win, or say Sergio Garcia, same thing. Great player, hasn't won a major because his putter just hadn't allowed him. It's not his ball striking. Well, Dustin's bugaboo for years was, if you would call it a bugaboo, was that his wedge play, his game from 100 yards and in, was just so far down the line from his long game. and he was putting himself in such great position, and then the wedges would prevent him from getting into scoring areas as opposed to just getting into a really good position. And there's a difference between wedging it to 12 to 15 feet and wedging it to 6 to 10 feet. It's just a lot different. And when you have that ability now that Dustin has, he's putting himself in a scoring slot as opposed to just putting himself on the green and then, you know, basically putting defensively. It's pretty magical to watch. I mean, it's really hard, Michael, to win three straight PGA Tour starts.
On these golf courses.
Well, that's what I was going to say. He did it in completely different places. He did it at Riviera. He did it at Mexico City, and now he does it in Austin, Texas. It's a remarkable run.
And if you're not as familiar with those golf courses, the ability to just manage your distances with all of the elevation changes and the geographical changes that come with those three sites. So I know this is the trendy topic right now, but what exactly are we supposed to make of Jon Rahm? Is he the next Seve? Is that just too cliche to ask? What do we learn from his performance this week?
Oh, I think he is a star in the making. Look, he won earlier this year at Torrey Pines. He had the lead. He caught Dustin Johnson, actually had the lead for about 5 or 6 minutes when he was on the tee at 16 on Sunday in Mexico City at the last WGC event. And now here he does. Here he goes again, making a run at another World Golf Championship event. These are the best players in the world he's going against. He's not playing against, you know, fields that are not stout every single week. There's a couple things about John that are amazing. A, he's only 22 years of age. He's got a lot of energy. I wouldn't call him a hothead, but he certainly is not someone who is flatlining it like Dustin is. He is someone who shows his emotions. He gets it out. He's fun to watch. Hits the ball a mile, Michael, a mile, and has a great short game. So he's got it all going on, and he followed the same path, interestingly, of Mickelson. He went to Phil Mickelson. He went to Arizona State, Phil Mickelson did. And then his coach at Arizona State became his agent. As soon as he graduated, he quit Arizona State and became his agent. His name is Steve Loy. Well, Tim Mickelson, who is Phil's younger brother, was the head coach at Arizona State Golf when Jon Rahm was recruited and went and played for the Sun Devils. He turns professional. Tim resigns as the head coach of ASU, and he is now the agent for Jon Rahm. So between his game and his off-course ability to, he gets it. He's good with the media. He's good with fans. He's good with other players. He's just a stud in the making, Mike. He's a really, really good player.
His remarks after Torrey Pines were some of the more endearing you'll hear from a professional athlete, just when you could actually see how appreciative he was for some of this immediate success. And it's so easy right now to see this meteoric rise for him and think back to Jordan Spieth's rookie season from a few seasons back, and you watch the way he plays. The front nine in the championship match, we had not really seen that emotional side from him in such a raw setting, and obviously match play may bring that out. I think that that definitely is helping the myth of Jon Rahm as it grows. And as a golf fan, as a fan of the golf swing, I think it's really refreshing to see a player whose swing seems so organic and identifiable to the player, and that is not one that is trying to fit into the textbook model. All right.
Oh well, if you look at his swing, Michael, think about it. If you think of it as a clock, you know, and most guys go on the PGA Tour to say 12 o'clock with their swing, or maybe even beyond. I mean, Mickelson goes past parallel with his swing, and he's 46 years old. John barely gets it above 3 o'clock. It's remarkable how much power he generates with that golf swing. And that, by the way, that emotional stuff, I think as he gets older and learns more about how to compete with the world's best players, microphones around, millions of fans watching on TV, thousands and thousands of fans watching in person, I think he'll dial some of that stuff back.
So you were there. There's been some chatter about the relative value in the course setup down in Austin. And on my end, in the use of the four-player pods to determine the weekend single elimination rounds. Effectively, two bombers played in the finals. Were you okay with the course setup, which seemingly favored the longer guys? I know it's match play, but many of these holes were reduced to sort of pitch and putts.
Yeah, well, that golf course would not be a good stroke play course. It's great for match play. It's set up well for match play, and they play the tips, man. They can't get it any farther. It's very difficult. I mean, the par 3 17th, they played 139 yards. I mean, they could play 150, but what's the difference? That's not, you know, anything you're crazy about. But it's difficult and it's challenging. Undulating greens. They've got elevation changes. There are a lot of ways to make golf courses more difficult when it comes to, you know, how much they pinch in the bunkers, how much they grow the rough, how fast the greens are. You can only make greens so fast, though, Michael, as you know, if they're undulating. You know, if next week when we go to Augusta, if the greens are, you know, they're going to be crazy fast. But if they're too fast, then there aren't many hole locations you can have because the ball will never stop on greens that are going to be rolling like they're on a tile floor. So I think the golf course is fantastic for match play. I also think match play rewards aggressive play, and it's not a stroke play event. People need to remember that. It's not that just those two guys got there because they hit the ball so far. They got there because they play aggressively, and there were plenty of guys in that field who could have won, but Dustin Johnson was the best player. He is the best player, and he's got everything working in his favor right now. So I thought the golf course was fine. I love the way they set it up. It's perfect for match play. It's a beautiful setting. And again, you have to put your foot on the pedal in that format. I think the four pod format stinks. I think they need to go back to the old format where it's one and done. I know TV doesn't love that.
Yeah, they're too afraid of losing Rory on day one.
Yeah, but you know what? I mean, you know, half the time when we were in Tucson, we got Tiger in the final. The other half, he would lose in the first couple of days. Did they lose Rory or Jordan on the first day if they would have had one and done 5 days ago on Wednesday or 6 days ago? Yes, but I think that's the beauty of match play is that it's one and done. That's the format. You have to live with it. It is what it is. You know, the NCAA tournament, all these other different formats where you have a match play type of situation where you're one and done. It's not a seven-game series. It's not the Caps trying to win a Stanley Cup final and losing the first game. Let's not even get past the second round, by the way, for the final.
But you're looking ahead.
You know what I mean? Like match play is one and done, and it's the way these guys are geared to play. It's the way the game is set up. It's the tradition of the game. And if you get Rory and Jordan and Dustin and John Rahm and all these great stars to go all the way to the weekend, great. But if you end up with Pierre Fulke and Steve Stricker and Scott McCarron and Kevin Sutherland, like we had a couple of times early on in the 2000s, you know, so be it. That's the way it is.
Yeah, I think with the tournament design, you're trying to get the best of both worlds, which is protecting a field that people want to watch on the weekend and also trying to keep some of the magic of match play. I would love to see it go single elimination throughout. And you just saw with the amount of WDs, and I know that that is specific to this year, but it just felt like an artificial way to enforce the rules of this tournament. I was seeing a lot of, you know, the critique on Twitter and just in various outlets about the course setup, and I thought it was a little facile. Just back to your point, I think this is a perfect match play golf course, and I think the casual fan does not realize that these players are making a conscious decision to play some of these holes in a slightly different way, in a more aggressive way, in a way that you might see a few times a year or a few times in a tournament, but that definitely comes out more in this. I think it's all about balance. I love having this golf tournament coming after a really wonderful stretch of difficult golf courses out west and down in Florida, and I think it precedes, at least for this year, something in the next week that is going to be the first major that makes it just a perfect way to really enter the golf season.
So I agree. I think, you know, look, if you take, I'll just give you one example. The 13th hole is a drivable par 4 at Austin Country Club. Really cool hole, water wrapped around the left side, kind of a boomerang shape from right to left hole. You can hit driver there and have a great shot at an eagle if you hit a great tee shot. Or you could hit just a little mid-iron and have yourself a 100-yard wedge. And half the time, guys would go for it, and the other half they wouldn't, and it depended on the situation. If you had a lead and you were on the 13th hole, most likely you would lay up. But if you needed to step on it and get aggressive because you were one or two down, you would go for it. So fans got to see everything there, not just in person but on television. I think that – people, as you said, very, very well stated, that in a subtle, subtle way, players play differently in match play than they do in stroke play. And I think the criticism you may have heard on Twitter or any other social media outlet is maybe an uneducated type of criticism. I don't mean that in a snob way. I just mean it as it's just a subtle, subtle difference in match play and stroke play, the way these guys go about their business. And I think if you don't recognize that, you can easily criticize it. I'm telling you, these guys absolutely love match play, and they love that golf course.
So no Tiger questions, but this next one might reveal my
That's
age.
Tragic.
I know. I'm not my father, so I will hold off on
now?
Tiger.
No, yeah. where are we now? On
Tiger? Where are we with Tiger? So Phil's
Nigel, let's end the phone call right now.
Yeah. Phil's off to a quiet but effective 2017. I say quiet because there are no wins. He seems in complete control of his scoring, if not necessarily his game, because we saw those first couple tournaments back. The long game in particular was pretty wayward. How much of a surprise is this, given his limited offseason coming off the surgeries, and does this good play continue into the majors?
I think it will. I think Phil is incredibly motivated to get another victory. You know, the last time he won was the Open in 2013 at Muirfield. He hasn't won since he won that last major. Phil puts a ton of pressure on himself to get back into contention and then try to get himself across the finish line. He desperately wants to win more because he knows that his window is closing. However, his game is sharp, his mind is sharp, and his enthusiasm is high. And I think that to be that energized at 46, when you've won 42 times, you're already in the World Golf Hall of Fame, you have won 5 major championships, you've won a Players. It's amazing to watch. I mean, I think that, you know, I'm not going to put it in a category of Tom Brady, you know, 40-plus wanting to play 6 or 7 more seasons and coming off of a Super Bowl championship. It's not that. But I do think in golf, it's pretty remarkable that Phil is in this position at this point in his career, still contending at big events against the best players in the world. Now, has there been a bit of a decline in the overall result? Yes, but he does seemingly put himself into decent positions going into the weekend. He had a great chance in Mexico a few weeks ago. I don't know. I don't see why he doesn't go next week to Augusta. As long as he hits it somewhere inside the ballpark off the tee, I think Phil might have a magical run in him and a chance at trying to win a fourth green jacket. I don't think he'll get to the finish line, but it wouldn't shock me at all if he puts himself in position over the weekend. By the way, one quick Phil story. He was playing the 15th hole, and I was in a golf cart to the left of the 15th hole, and I was driving down the left side of the fairway, and I had 3 people yell La Cheeserie at one point. Mm. And he was on the in the middle of the fairway, and he kind of looked over and was like, "What's that?" And anyway, he was playing, so I couldn't explain it to him. But
Bones will know.
The Cheeserie reference continues to roam free in the golf world.
It grows.
In the wild.
Got to hear it at Augusta coming up.
It's so good. By the way, I think it's hilarious. I listen to you guys' podcasts every day. I get funny texts from you, obviously, Michael, and your father, Tony. I can't get over how crazy that whole thing has gone. And by the way, I'm thoroughly enjoying all the Indochino suits and all the great success you guys have.
Oh, yeah. The Indochino.
We all have Indochino on right now, Steve.
Hey, Sans.
I'm telling you, I listen to this. I will be, I'm sure I'll be on with you guys next week. I will be at Augusta next week, and it's one of the great weeks of the year, but it's one of the only weeks of the year I have to wear a suit and tie 8 straight games.
Oh, nice.
From Sunday.
You got your
Sunday.
Threads game
I
ready?
Have,
but the new music for Live from the Masters is fantastic, by the way.
Actually, you know what? You're right. The Live from the Masters music is tremendous. I have 4 brand new, count them, 4
yeah.
brand new Indochino suits.
Boom.
Ready
nice.
To be gone next week.
Attaboy. Steve Sands, local Montgomery County local Charles W. Woodward class of 1987, which, by the way, Sands, you know they're reopening Woodward as a high school. I don't know if you heard
that. I heard, but they're not going to call it Woodward, right?
No, I believe it is going to be Woodward.
Well, they are going to call
it. But anyway, I just wanted to ask you as a local, I know you're a diehard Skins fan, so we talk about this all the time. What do you think is going to happen with Kirk Cousins? What do you want to see happen with Kirk Cousins?
Well, I think the mess of the Bruce Allen – is Bruce Allen still there?
He is, yes. Not in the room, but he is.
Okay, but – oh, he's not in the room?
Not with us, no.
Oh, good. Then I hope he's not at Redskin Park either. Get him out of there. I think they should have signed him 2 years ago because it would have saved him money anyway because they're going to be paying him the amount of money he would have been guaranteed in the first place. That's the first thing. Having said that, did he deserve it at the time? Probably not. But I would have listened to McLuhan. If you're going to be an owner and a president in the NFL, and you're going to hire a solid football guy in Scott McLuhan, the very least you could do is listen to him. And if he says, I want to sign Kirk Cousins, then you sign Kirk Cousins. That's the way it works. What do I think is going to happen? I think they're going to play it out, and I think Cousins is going to leave. I don't think they're going to sign him before. Is it July 15th? I forget the date.
That's right.
July 15th. I don't think they're going to sign him. I think he's going to realize that he doesn't like the chaos that's going on. That nonsense was almost behind us. Almost.
So he'll
so close.
He'll play the year, walk away, and we get a third round pick.
Correct. I think he's going to go to San Francisco or somewhere he's comfortable with whoever maybe the Rams or McVay. I don't know, but I just don't see how
go play with Dustin Johnson.
I just don't see how he thinks that the Skins organization is stable enough for him to sign a long term deal when he can get that same long term deal somewhere else.
Well, Steve, thank you again for coming on with us. This was an absolute treat for me, and I'm sure we will talk to you in the next week or so for the Masters.
Can I give you one last thing?
Yeah, please.
Wayne Gretzky, okay, the soon-to-be father-in-law, I guess kind of father-in-law of Dustin Johnson, was at the tournament last week. I go up to him. We're talking caps. We're talking hockey. We're talking pucks. He loves Ovechkin. He and Ovechkin talk all the time. He thinks the caps are really good. And he doesn't think we're going to get by the second round of Pittsburgh.
Oh, my God.
Thanks a lot, Wayne.
Yeah, thanks for that.
I couldn't believe it, man. I was like, you know what? That really stinks.
What reason does he have to feel that way?
It's a very, very tough spot. So
on that downer, thank you again.
See you, Sands. Take care.
Steve Sands, boys and girls. We will come back with news with Nigel.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
All right, this is the SeatGeek read. Buying tickets,
is this the SeatGeek read?
Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be way too complicated, but there is a better, simpler way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I have the SeatGeek app, and I've actually used the SeatGeek app. And we have a personal story because a friend of mine from college, Paul Hahn, is out in Los Angeles and reached out to me for the SeatGeek app code so that he could go see the Wizards playing in Los Angeles tonight. So get the SeatGeek app and use that. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Enter promo code Tony. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code Tony today.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show. Tony Kornheiser Show.
Sorry, I forgot to tell you who this is.
Golly. First the computer
and
now
this. If only I want to find this band. I don't know how to do it.
Sabotaging you.
This is a frequent musician on the show.
The Beatles?
Dustin Merkel and the Lively Exchange from Atlanta. And this is a new song they've got called Goosebumps.
Beautiful. And Michael, if people want to send us their music.
Oh, hi, Dad. If you want to send us your music, you can send it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
Michael, quick question. I've got a lot of birthdays coming up, and I'd like to buy some merchandise for the Tony Kornheiser Show. How is there a way on the internet I can do that?
You know, there's a microsite where you can get show-related apparel, mugs.
Is that a www site?
This would be a www site. Go to shop.tonykornheisershow.com and buy all those grid.
Well, that
great
was
gifts.
That was really helpful.
And one other question, Michael, for those who may have mistakenly scrubbed through the open of this show when you announced who was joining you, who had top billing in that list? I'm just trying to recall.
Would that be Big Time Gary Perron?
I think that's correct. And then there was a number two, aptly named number two.
How come he doesn't? I don't understand why I don't have a nickname
like Saliza CNN. That should be pointed out. I am now at the fix.
You can't imagine the agita that went into figuring that one out. Holy cow! We focus group that one.
Was it your decision to add the CNN? Is that company policy?
No, it's not company policy. But I kind of like to do it. Yeah, I thought
it was a good move.
I didn't mind it.
Did you get a tattoo with that?
Yes, lower back.
So I had to get
the other one I had there removed.
How many followers did you lose with the name switch?
I can't really tell. I mean, when you're so big time as me, you lose and gain a lot of people.
Presently tipping the scales as of this recording at 462,273 followers.
I think I gained a fair amount because there's a whole CNN world of people, I think, that didn't. And may not know who I am, but who...
Still don't.
So the fix is out there now if someone wanted to be...
No, it's not, because, like I said, this was a complex series of moves. So I was on Slack, our instant messaging communication, because I still have my post computer, I was on Slack communicating with their social media guy at the Post so that as soon as I... Because I changed my handle... As soon as I did it,
they snapped it up.
Yes.
And I should have gotten that handle when it was over.
And did you gave it to them for a song, I hope, right? You didn't really bend them over for that.
Under seven figures.
Okay.
I'm surprised they wanted to keep that handle.
I agree.
I mean, how far you put that into the ground.
Isn't part of the negotiation that when it replaced Democracy Dies in Darkness to God Bless Saliza?
Yeah, Saliza is gone. What's interesting is I'm going to start a new blog called The Fix Double X. At CNN.
You should use three X's to avoid any confusion.
That's really true.
That's the way you want to go.
I've long talked about doing a blog on the adult entertainment industry. It's been a big time, it's a passion project.
I must say, along the lines of @SalizaCNN, your present banner for your Twitter handle is very disturbing, and I will just leave it at that.
It's amazing.
People can go to @SalizaCNN.
Perfectly combed.
It's the side of Donald Trump's hair.
It's an extreme close-up of the side.
Did the CNN art team prepare that for you?
I have had that photo. I keep photos that make me happy. There's one of Nigel just smiling at me, pointing, like, hey, this guy. I've had that photo for a really long time. Double guns. I've had that photo for a really long time because as big time Gary Braun pointed out, it's a extreme close up. You can the comb
strong.
Over the ear is
it's
disturbing on many levels.
It is. It's haunting.
Yes.
Great news.
I know. So far, well, congratulations on the move to CNN. Chris.
Thank you so much. I just wish I could have a nickname that would be. You know, I've never had a cool nickname, and I just wish Gary is SG.
He's got SG3.
SG3 and Big Time Gary
Braun.
Right.
Yeah, you got a lot.
Yeah.
What's your nickname, Nigel?
Nigel.
Oh, that is a good one.
that's what everyone... Nige, I think everyone calls me.
His last name is Smith. Everyone calls him Smitty.
Smitty, yes.
CC, very original. We could call you.
No, I don't like that.
Yes,
okay, then CC it is.
CC, there you go.
I was named after CC Winans, interestingly enough.
A big vote in the National Football League yesterday at the owners' meeting. Huh. Yes, in fact, the Oakland Raiders will no longer be the Oakland Raiders. They will now be the Las Vegas Raiders, although still figuring out their exit plan from Oakland. I'm sorry. If you can hear
it's just a horn being honked at me.
Pardon Chris.
Near the undiscloses location has been very angry. Yeah, second
just
time we've heard this.
Must be double parked.
31-1 the vote to approve the move. The one lone dissenting vote, the Miami Dolphins.
Which the fish.
Yeah, the fish. Yeah. I saw
Huizenga. Is it Huizenga who still owns them? Or is it somebody else? I saw the quote from the owner, and it was like... Stephen Ross. Based on principle, blah, blah, blah. I mean, come on, whatever. Can we talk about the more important thing there?
What's that?
Mark Davis's haircut on display again.
Lloyd Christmas.
Yes.
It's so brutal.
For those who are not familiar with the owner of the Oakland Raiders, it's Mark Davis, the son of legendary Al Davis, and his haircut is just... It's a failure on everything.
To cut it that straight
is difficult to achieve.
It's a bowl. It's a bowl type situation. I mean, that's the only way you could do it.
A bowl would have shape to it.
Well, it goes from it's shorter at the top, and then it kind of slowly meanders back, and then it's long in the back, which I had never noticed.
You got to let the back rage.
So true.
Party in the front. Back. Yeah.
Now, does Raider Nation convey with the move, or did
you
come up
you
with
said they're
new?
The Oakland Raiders no more. I mean, they're always going to be the Oakland Raiders.
I don't know
if I've
got some friends in Gretchen Wu from Oakland.
Yep.
That's Oaktown to people like us, I suppose. And they were very upset with the prospect of this. I don't know where they will be now. I suppose if I were an Oakland Raiders fan, I would renounce the team. I'd be like, now you've left twice.
I think there's a lot of, I mean, I've seen online a lot of like Raider Nation saying,
I'm not suggesting they're okay with
you're,
it.
You're
I'm
saying,
just saying
they'll always
you know,
be.
To a 40-something man,
always
to
be
me,
the Oakland Raiders.
My man.
They're the Oakland Raiders.
Right. It's really sad stuff. When you see them take their little trash can and put all the jerseys
and
bobbleheads
right.
and banners in
the
there.
The spikes that they wear.
This is, there were various reports about public money, how many hundreds of millions and how much more is available, but this is such a boon for Vegas. I mean, those eight weekends a year that they are hosting games, NFL fans from all over the country are obviously going to go to attend these games and tear Vegas up. And Vegas, it's going to take some time to figure out, you know, bad stuff happens in Vegas with professional athletes.
What's the home field advantage going to be like once they do make that move?
Well, 60, in terms 40? Of crowd?
Yeah, crowd.
I think the crowd would be neutral.
I don't know. I think it's going to be pretty neutral field.
60-40 would be good.
Yeah, like a bowl game,
I
would say. Not like a home game. Like
yeah, like
a bowl
people
game.
Just coming from out of town. Let's go to Vegas. Let's see a game.
Right. Well, if you're
playing the Packers, that's going to be a 70-30,
right. Cowboys,
80-20
Cowboys.
Packers crowd. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they just...
Right.
I didn't understand, because I thought that this... Long talked about, but I thought it had fallen through because Sheldon Adelson, the very famous casino magnate who owns the Cosmopolitan,
took a ton of money off the table.
They took all he was going to put in like $700 million, and then they took it off. He said, "Well, I'm not." So they obviously found an alternate funding.
Well, public, couple hundred million of public.
But there's got to be private money in it because I mean, I can't imagine they're going to do like a bond or something.
And I find it interesting that every owner, with the exception of Ross in Miami, every single owner was behind this. Not that they necessarily shouldn't have been, but I guess they just think it's good for the profile of the league and the rise.
Imagine
the
owner's visiting booth when they go over to Vegas.
Oh.
Right. By the way, is Bank of America stepped in and they pledged $650 million loan. So and that replaced Sheldon.
So they don't do that. Bank of America is not in the business of losing money.
No, that's an investment.
Right.
Right. I mean,
Just I think it will probably be successful there. It's just a shame for the Oakland fans to lose a team again. I mean, you saw Baltimore fans, you've seen Cleveland fans. I think I looked at something that said the NFL has had more teams switch locations in the last like 20 years than any other league by far and away.
Well, the related story yesterday was San Diego announcing they had completely sold out their stadium, which if you haven't been paying attention is a 30,000 seat arena next year that the San Diego Chargers will be playing in.
Anybody can take my team. Washington team is up for grabs.
We will gladly trade them.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. By the way, I guess there were some remarks over the weekend. We didn't get a chance to talk about it with Alan, and he was like saying basically that, we've made the right decisions.
Yeah.
Everything is good, and you know, everything is moving along, you know,
nothing
at normal speed. Yeah,
plan
nothing to
see
here.
Being executed.
Yeah, it seems a bit out of touch there.
What?
I know. There was one particular South Carolina fan, as South Carolina made it to their first Final Four, who was very excited. A friend of this show has contributed artistically to this show, and that would be Darius Rucker. You might know him as Hootie from Hootie and the Blowfish, was at the game.
Covered me.
Yeah, he did. He covered the mailbag theme. Yes, he did. And
one
he
of
was
many.
Openly weeping at the sight of the Gamecocks.
Like a true fan.
Yeah, and I think everybody that knows him or knows of him, knows he's a huge sports fan.
Well,
and
he was, I'm sorry, Nigel, he was gigging on Saturday night. I saw this on Twitter. I don't know if you guys saw it. And it was like an over-the-shoulder from behind him shot that said, you know, even having a gig won't stop Darius from watching the Gamecocks. And from behind him, you could see where you have like the return monitors coming at you with the audio.
The
he had a huge TV screen. So he's up there playing, watching the game.
That's
awesome.
That's multitasking.
So the real takeaway is, Darius, if you are listening to this fine podcast, can we have the rights to play your version of Gary's jingle again?
Yes. Yeah, and Darius, who I imagine will go to the Final Four, I will
have
be out
to.
There. So hit me up and let's hook up while we're out there.
Yeah, track him down and take care of that for us.
Yeah,
would you?
I will.
Are you guys going to play a joint gig maybe out there?
I don't know, but I'll. I think from about 10 years ago, 12 years ago, I was down at the Monday with the Masters with Tony, the event that they all did down there, and I'll see if his old email address and phone number work. Yeah. I'll hit him up, see if we can get the hookup going.
We do love Darius.
Yeah, I want you to get a selfie. The only thing I care about is a selfie with Frank Martin, Gary.
He's a crazy
He scares the crap out of me. Yeah, they talked about it yesterday on the show. That dude is, he's got the crazy
I made all my kids watch his response to that Sports Illustrated
that
kid
yes.
question thing, and they were very scared of Mr. Martin. He was like very intimidating, even in praising
And he
that
was
kid.
Being nice.
Yeah.
When he's on the sideline, I mean, he also, one other Frank Martin thing. I think Roy has some nice clothes, old Roy Williams,
sure.
But I actually think Frank Martin is really like fashion wise. What do you think, Michael? You pay attention to this. He had a really nice jacket and pant combo in the Sweet 16.
He had a great jacket in the Duke game. I feel like he's stepped away from some of the livelier colors.
Yeah.
Whereas Roy always has,
but it's
the
always Gamecock colors.
Roy always has
the patterns.
Roy has that checkerboard. Like blue and light,
that
light
only
blue
right.
and
with
gray
one tie.
Jacket.
But man, that Carolina blue looks good with everything. That Gamecock maroon or whatever it is. Forgive
that's
me,
tough
South
to pair.
Carolina. Yeah, I don't. It's a
but
hard
but
match.
It, to Michael's point, that Duke game, he looked good. He had like that dark maroon color on.
I mean,
plus,
a,
he's huge.
It was a late game, but that was a prime time jacket.
Heck yeah!
Speaking of college basketball, we did not get a chance to get your reaction on this of the changing of the head coach at Georgetown.
Yeah, it had to happen.
Are you surprised?
They had two losing seasons in a row. They hadn't been to the Sweet 16 in 10 years. Yes, I was stunned. As anyone who listens to the show knows, I'd always assumed he would never be fired because his father made the school, and they just named the athletic facility after his father. There's a statue of his father outside the athletic facility. There's a good piece by Dave McKenna, who used to write for the City paper on Deadspin, I think it's today, about how the fact that Mike Bray is in the mix is so I am 1,000% in on Shaka Smart. I wanted Archie Miller. I would love Shaka Smart. I would love Mike Bray. Tom Crean would be fine. I don't know if they'll hire any of them. But there's a great piece because Bray is a Morgan Wooten acolyte.
Yeah.
He went to DeMatha. He coached at DeMatha. And John Jr., John the Third's father, and Wooten hated one another.
Yes, they did.
But legendary hatred. So McKenna's piece argues that Bray being in the mix and the potential hiring of Bray, who has a lot of connections to this area,
well, he's from this
wise,
area,
right,
yeah.
would be a full break with the Thompson era. Because again, if you hire Amaker or Patrick Ewing
right.
that's still a continuation. It shows that Big John still has
right.
some hand there. If you hire Bray,
it says
or Shaka
break.
Smart or Crean or you know any of these or Danny Hurley. Who I believe is definitely in the mix from folks I know. You know, that's a break, and I think we need a break.
We still don't have any sense of the extent of John Thompson Jr.'s knowledge, sign-off, input.
The only thing we do not, he has not said anything publicly. The only thing we have is the, and I this, I believe, was our old friend Andy Poley, saying and I don't this is not a wrong assessment I don't think saying the fact that David Falk they put out John Thompson III put out a statement via David Falk their agent longtime agent Patrick Ewing's agent through David Falk about the firing that suggested that they were that there was a deep unhappiness because it wasn't JT3 it was Falk you know who we it's very it's hard to
right
know. I wanted Archie Miller he went to Indiana which I understand is probably a better opportunity at this point. Thank you for letting me have that time.
Yeah, wow. This
come
is
on,
the
Shaka
Chris
Smart.
Saliza CNN.
Good news.
News
at
what
Saliza
do you
CNN.
Think, Chris?
There you go. That's what I'm famous for. That's all I've got.
Great. Perfect newscast. We will
Nailed
come
it.
Back with Old Guy Radio and a song that brings me back to my youth.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Elevate your underwear game to the next level with Me Undies. What is Me Undies? Oh, just seriously soft, feel-good undies delivered right to your door.
Yeah, if you don't know.
Yeah. MeUndies are designed in L.A. and made from sustainably sourced micromodal, a fabric 3 times softer than cotton. MeUndies softer than soft, Luxe Undies come in an ever-changing selection of classic colors, bold shades, and adventurous patterns, so you can tailor your undies to your own personal style. Okay, Here I'm tossing to myself. I have had
let myself
the classic
introduce
colors,
myself.
The bold shades, and the adventurous patterns, and I believe the other gentlemen in this room yep. have had me undies, though owned by them at the time of gifting.
I always say when I wear underwear, it's me undies.
It's always me undies.
That's a money
wear underwear. And guess what? You can save time and money each month with a monthly subscription. And if you're not ready for a subscription, that's okay. You can still save. That's because MeUndies is offering you 20% off your first pair. Just use our special URL, MeUndies.com/TonyK, and get 20% off your first pair. So go ahead, revamp your underwear drawer. You deserve it. Once again, that's MeUndies.com/TonyK. MeUndies.com/TonyK.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Okay, so this is Old Guy Radio, and you might be asking yourself, why is Michael Kornheiser, a 30-something, playing Working in a Coal Mine? In the area of critical commentary, this is going off script a little bit, new listeners might not remember this, but there is a story tradition of Loyal Littles sharing mixtapes and mix CDs with my dad. And a lot of these would get lost along the way. Sometimes he would give shout-outs to those who'd made them, read notes. Sometimes these would come with liners that would just give you a heads-up as to what was actually coming up. More often than not, these would get lost in the bottom of my dad's car. And Working in a Coal Mine is just one of those songs that I discovered through one of these mixtapes, probably in high school, as we were taking a road trip to go visit colleges. So at this juncture, it makes me happy to listen to. And it also reminds me that after being involved in a move to a new house for the last week, I feel like I have been working in a coal mine, and I'm just asking, how long can this go on?
Bobby Dorsey, by the way, you may not know this, but his other big hit, and I say this specifically
I certainly
to you,
don't know this,
was Ride a Pony. And I thought of that
no.
as
a... Now you're just trolling me. There's what? No way
no
this is true.
Way.
Absolutely. No, it's 100% right. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Somewhere Dad is laughing.
Riding a pony.
Ride a Pony, yes, by Lee Dorsey. And by the way, as I was looking him up last night, you know what his big passion was?
Riding ponies.
Working on cars. They said when he...
Working in a coal mine.
Yeah, not working in a coal mine. But they said, yeah, when he was done like singing, he just wanted to go out back and work on cars.
Interesting.
It was his huge passion.
Working in a coal mine also... politically relevant today, given
that's right, given EPA regulations.
That's right, rollback of the EPA regulation.
Michael, are you so there were mixtapes were a part of your life?
Yes,
I feel like, see, I thought
well, when
you
he says mixtape, he means CD, right?
Well, no, these were actually back in the 90s.
Yeah, I'm
these
wondering,
were
cassette.
Mixed cassette tapes,
but that's because
that
of
listeners
your,
would make.
I remember
and
that
we would share these.
I remember them.
Oh, I mean, I used them. That was my whole like. You know, teen years. Oh, yeah. I thought you were too young for it.
No, I distinctly remember listening to the radio, waiting for the Macarena to come on.
Oh, yes.
So I could cue up the record. But then you'd get these mixtapes that people would send in, and you'd have the cramped handwriting that would try and share
oh,
the
yeah.
20
And then
songs.
Later people would send CDs, and I remember, and they would
I
want to
wear your skin as a
notes.
Suit type situation.
No.
Well, and then, so Dad would have the car where you could load material, and it would save it. But all of these were homemade CDs, so he would load the CD into the car, and it would then be saved as track 12.
Yeah,
and
right.
And so
you'd
have 100
have
track 12.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And he would always ask, can I bring my music to a new car? And they would laugh at him.
Yeah.
And so when cars would get passed down, shared throughout the family, you would just queue up all this saved music.
All
have
the track
no
12s.
Idea what was going to come up next.
Do That's they funny. Still have, you guys have both probably bought cars more recently than me. Do they still have cassette tape?
No.
Players?
Gosh, no.
That's not a thing anymore, right?
They rarely have CD players.
CD
now.
Players are hard to come
well,
by.
Well, I know in certain high-end cars, BMWs, Nigel, they probably don't, but...
No.
So, no tape... I think my car still has a tape player.
Wow, that would
I'm
be...
I'm going to go out and check, but I'm almost
hardcore.
Sure it does.
By the way, Ride Your Pony reached number 7 in the R&B charts in 1965. So, yeah.
That's hysterical.
Yeah, I'll have to play that for you guys
Ride
sometime.
Your Pony.
All right, today is a Tuesday, which means that we have trivia from Chad's from last night.
Oh, yay!
So I will try and share a few of these questions to contestants Big Time Gary Braun, Chris No Nickname Saliza.
No, that's not a good nickname. No Nickname.
No Nickname is actually a pretty good nickname, yeah.
Wheels within wheels.
Old No Nickname Saliza.
How about
Old
Diesel?
No Nickname.
How about Two Diesel? Sheds?
You can't make your own nickname.
Diesel.
Chris Two Sheds Saliza.
That could work. Big Teeth.
All right, we'll start with the easy questions. What is stored in a camel's hump?
So water is what you want to say.
Yeah, that's obvious. Luggage?
I mean, it could be fat or it could be old mixtapes.
What about
I'm going to go with water. I think you always go with your initial instinct.
What about another hump? You know, hump.
Backup
hump. It's got to be water.
Maybe it has Saliza's nickname in the hump.
Water.
The answer is fat.
Fat.
Like I said, fat. Right. Nailed it. One for one.
One for one.
Storing water. What an idiot.
Idiots.
Like it's got a canteen in there. Like if then when you got on its back, wouldn't it like get like a, that's like so a, stupid.
Like one of those yeah,
we'll,
packs.
We'll clean that up.
Like
make
one
it
of
sound smart.
Get that. Clean that up in post. Clean it up in post.
More commonly called the tailbone, what is the name of the final segment?
Coccyx.
You must play a lot of trivia.
Coccyx.
Yes. I just wanted to say that again, right?
Fun words you learned in
Chris
school.
Coccyx Saliza.
That could work.
Close.
CCC.
Does have a nice ring to
triple
it.
C. Edit that
triple
out.
Triple C.
Triple H.
Yeah. There
triple
you go.
Which war began when the Holy Roman Emperor Ferdinand II of Bohemia attempted to impose religious uniformity on the northern Protestant states?
That's a Nigel question.
I want to say Vietnam, but let me think.
Grenada? I think it was Grenada.
Korea.
Yeah.
What about the Peloponnesian War, Nigel? You know about all
a little
that
later.
Stuff.
No, not the Peloponnesian. That was the ancient Greeks. I'm going to go with the Hundred Years' War. That sounds lovely, doesn't it?
That's does involve years.
The 20
years'
war?
30
years' war.
30 years' war is correct.
Very nice.
What was that?
How long was that one?
That was about 30 years.
About 35? Oh, yeah. This was 1618. Yeah. And can you get the end date?
1829.
Well done.
Sounds about right.
Thank
well
you.
Well done.
Well, I mean, I majored in math, so.
Which good turnout last night for trivia?
I have no clue.
Oh, you weren't there?
We were actually considering going there for dinner, but the move took a little longer than we had planned.
You have movers, right?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
I view it this way. When you're in college,
yeah.
You get your buddies to move you in a van.
Yes.
When you're 25 going to your first apartment, you get a U-Haul and drive yourself across
that's right.
state lines.
This is the right.
And you want to break up with whoever is in the vehicle with
right.
you.
Right.
When
Nigel.
You're 30... You hey, decide
somebody.
To have somebody else come
yes.
pack
yes,
and move
everything.
Your belongings, hey. And then you're still overwhelmed by just the sheer volume of
yep.
stuff that follows you everywhere you move.
I have said this on my last move that I'm not kidding. I would pay $35,000 to move my house because I just
I will is, move you
my
next
wife,
time.
My wife and I will divorce. Otherwise, I can't do it.
I was asked in, I'm guessing, 1993, I was a year out of college, to help Todd Castleberry, longtime friend of this show.
Really?
And his wife move. He was my boss at the time, Tony's boss at the time. He was
can't
the program
turn him
director.
Down.
Your boss he, at the time asked,
asked
you to help,
you
him
help
move?
Right.
He can't get movers?
That's an F on his part.
Well, he, you know, I mean, he was a friend too, but no, it wasn't a D move or anything. It was totally cool. And I was like, yeah, sure. Well, you know, I'd never helped anyone move before. And he's like, all right, and it's an easy move. They're moving from a condo to a townhouse.
There is no such thing
he's like,
as an
just
easy
show up,
move.
Just show up at the condo at Crystal City, you know, 11 a.m. or whatever.
Crystal
I get there.
City.
I'm not kidding, and God bless his wife, Tina, at the time, love her, she's great. I get there, it was like, they hadn't even begun to, like, the closets were, like, full of stuff.
That's why they hired you.
Yeah, it was a very long day.
And let me
I
guess,
still
they
don't
got
talk
you,
to
they
Todd.
Got you pizza at the end.
Still don't talk to him. No, he probably took care of me, if I remember correctly.
Which is larger and holds more
Saliza.
Beer?
Saliza.
My belly.
Diesel.
A British pint or an American pint?
I'm going to say a British pint on that.
The American pint, I want to say, is 16.9 ounces. So I'm going to go American pint by almost a full ounce.
Do you use the metric system for this?
I don't know. Ounces. I don't know, but I know America is better than Britain at everything. Hashtag make America great again. So I'm going to say America.
Americans.
Dang right.
It's not Americans.
The the British pint. 568 millimeters or milliliters versus 473.
Told you, Gary.
Oh, maybe it's the British pint that's 16.9.
Edit that in post. Yeah. I got that one right, too. 3 for 3. Keep going.
Yeah, Diesel's winning.
Coccyx. Actually, I've remembered the nickname that I liked the best that no one said fit me, which is Boogie.
Boogie, yes.
By the way, British Boogie. Pint, otherwise known as an imperial pint.
Right.
Had you said that, then I would have gotten it.
Well, that would be
19.2 ounces.
Yeah, there you go.
That the U.S. pint, the American I believe, pint. Is
I believe I got that one right.
Well, that'll change under the Trump presidency. It's
already
America.
Already has.
The correct answer is actually the American pint, despite those numbers.
At Chad's, we only serve imperial pints.
Is that right?
No.
Oh, okay.
It's not even
a
close.
Good tag.
Yeah.
How about Imperial Pint for a nickname for you, dude?
No, I like Boogie.
IP.
It fits me. Yes, Boogie maybe. Or Diesel.
Boogie or Diesel.
I want to be named after an American gladiator. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Within 2 years, Spartacus. I had a plan here, Diesel. I had a plan. Within 2 years, what year did the first automatic teller machine, that's ATM for you, in the U.S. open for business.
What year? So I can get back to you in like 20 months on this?
Within 2 years.
So I'm going to have two years to answer?
Plenty of time.
Within 2 years.
I'm going to be very close. Go ahead.
Okay, they definitely weren't around when I was a kid, like a young child. It's got to be sometime in the 80s, right, Gary?
Sometime in the 80s. So here's my deal.
I'm going to say 85.
Well, he's saying way
he's
off.
He's saying we're way off. 70. Or is he throwing us off the scent like Imperial Pint?
Well, I know this. What automatic teller machine?
The first one, Mike, or when they became like common?
No, just the first one.
The first ATM open for business.
I mean, that could be.
What I was going to say is they were becoming ubiquitous in the late 80s because I was in college and using them a lot.
Earlier than that.
So sure, within 2 years, 79. I'd say since
he said not even close. 73.
I'll say 83.
1969.
Wow.
Dang it. I was within 4 years. I'm counting it. Wow. Closest to the hole. Count it. Got it again.
That was good. Pick that
closest
one up.
To the pin. Pick it up. That one's good.
In the winter of 1847.
Tough winter.
Long winter.
In the 2015.
Yeah.
Which family? Kevin had a storm.
Donna.
Weekend.
Boom. Next.
All right. Boom.
Next
Manson.
Question.
Manson. Count it. Move on.
Which part of a flower is made up of the filament and the anther?
The pistil? Is that what it's called?
Stamens.
I was gonna say pistil. It's either stamen or pistil, isn't it?
Nigel's correct.
It's stamen.
Yeah.
How about that?
There we go.
This is the thing about Nigel. He's sneaky smart
yes.
because he's good at
he reads a lot.
I'd say has a lot of information.
He's good at NCAA.
I wouldn't say smart.
He's good at NCAA brackets and he's pretty good at trivia.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
This whole not smart bit that he puts
on. Well,
the bracket
thing
is just,
to that's me. Just math. He just aggregates all the brackets and then he you
really,
know,
well, he
I
fills
do,
it out as it goes.
Well, right.
Like when the team wins, he fills
it about the
up.
Last 10 games.
Yes. What I have done is I go over a video of every single game of every single team and then I say, okay, this is how I'll make my selection.
But only for the previous two seasons, though. You don't go back 5 years or anything.
Well, not anymore. Because that's too much time.
I did like Reale giving it to Pablo over South Dakota State yesterday on the podcast. Hammering him for picking against.
Well,
Gonzaga.
I didn't realize that he had muted Pablo for 5 days in a row.
Yes, because
ATH.
Of the South Dakota State pick.
That reveals Go that
rattle.
I don't watch ATH.
Go rattle.
According to the Blink 182 song,
oh.
What's My Age Again?
What's my
Nobody
age
likes you when you're what age?
30.
Wow.
30. I'm saying 30.
16.
Oh, 21. I see what you're doing there.
It's going the other way.
Yeah, going the other way. Playing smart. The answer is 23.
Nah!
23.
Nobody likes you.
Yeah, I sort of figured.
Nobody
Blink
likes you when you're 23. Yeah.
Sing the rest of it.
What's my age again? What's my age again? Can I? Can we insert my agent booking information after that?
Yes, we will.
For gigs.
Go to at Saliza CNN.
Please contact Boogie Saliza directly.
At the end of the show, you can hear the full cut.
Yes.
Today of that.
Rounded to the nearest gram, how many grams are in an ounce?
Well, this I can figure out.
This
because
I can't
there's,
figure out.
Break it there, down.
Okay, there's something like... hang on, let me give you...
podcast or a visual medium.
Okay,
so
ask me the question
picture.
Again. How many grams are in an ounce?
To the nearest gram. How many grams are in an ounce?
It's in the neighborhood of 3. It's in the neighborhood of 3. That's going to be my answer. I'm good with numbers.
10.
I'm going to say 8.
The answer is 28, which is a few neighborhoods away.
You said
from 28? 28.
Okay, so 30 is what I meant. You know, I'm bad with numbers. I missed a zero. I was right in the ballpark.
Well, in truth, out of all numbers on Earth, 3 is in the neighborhood
incredibly
of 28.
Incredibly close. Yeah, plus, right. it's in...
It's only 25.
It's a multiple of 28.
Just so I can make the clean edit, could you just say 28?
28.
Hey, Chris got it.
Nice, Chris. Boom.
How many questions have we had? I'm on a roll.
What is Englishman Mark Roberts famous for doing in public over 500 times?
Wow. I'm sorry. What's
is this the unrating podcast?
Englishman Mark Roberts famous for doing what in public over 500 times?
Everyone's looking at me. I don't.
Streaking? I don't know. I should know him. He's an Englishman. I should know what he
did.
Yeah,
you know what? That's a good guess. He might be the guy who ran in the British Open with 19th hole written on his back with the arrow.
That's a good bit.
Yeah.
That's a good bit.
Yeah, I remember that.
So I'll go with streaking, Nigel. I like that. That's a clever answer.
The answer is streaking.
I'm
wondering why Nigel got that so quickly.
This is what I'm saying. He's sneaky smart. Don't let his buffoonish look.
We're going streaking.
He has the complete works of Mark Roberts DVD collection at home.
Well, it's rather compelling.
That's all the good parts.
Do you see how he kind of backed into it? Like, hey, what if, guys? I don't know. I'm going to throw something out here. You spit it back. You don't like
it. Just a guess.
I mean, I'm not into bestiality, but.
In the Ghostbusters franchise, what is the energy weapon used to weaken and aid in capturing ghosts?
Oh, it's a proton.
Flux capacitor.
No, that's where
different.
They,
that's yeah. Yeah.
And I just saw the one with Sean Spicer in it, and I don't remember.
Not Sean
Spicer. The proton.
It's a proton something.
Yeah, it is. It's a proton something. You're right.
Proton pack.
Proton gun. I don't know.
Proton pack.
Proton pack. Attaboy.
There you go.
28.
How many have I gotten right?
All of them.
How many
11.
Questions? All of them. All
every
150.
Single question.
I'm on the way to a Kim Jong-un, like 18 and 18 holes.
Yes, so glorious leader. Well, nice shot.
I'm nailing it.
All right. Last question.
You are fake
and
news.
This one is, I think, right up Boogie's alley.
Yes.
For how many seasons was Desperate Housewives on television?
Okay. Well, my wife, important there.
You have a wife?
Yeah, yes, it's true. Most people, when they find out I have a wife and then what she looks like, literally say, you're the luckiest person on earth because I'm like a tree frog and my wife is beautiful.
That could be the nickname right there, tree
like
frog.
Tree frog.
He's got the annoying chirp.
I prefer, again, Boogie or Diesel or Adonis or something like that. We watched 4 years for sure, and then we left off after 4 years. So I think it went on at least two more and maybe three more. So I'm going to say seven.
My knee jerk was going to be seven, but I also felt like it was sort of a comet. So like maybe it wasn't there that long. So just to give it some variety, I'll say five.
Okay.
And say you guys got off at the end.
I will say nine.
The answer is eight.
Oh, dang it.
2004 to 2012.
Yeah, see, by the end, though, I mean...
Well, the ratings then were just tanking.
Yeah, I mean, the beginning with Terry Hatcher, and that was a good show. They got into the ridiculous... I mean, it's like every show. They get into the ridiculous... The plot lines become like, murdered someone.
Right.
You're like, that seems unlikely.
Run out of stuff to do.
Follow-up question. How many seasons was Dawson's Creek on the air?
Oh, that's a really good question. One, two...
I'll Google it. Hang on.
I think... I own them all on DVD.
How many DVDs
all the seasons.
Do you have?
Well, they're by season. They're like by pack because they couldn't fit that much in one season. I think there are four total Dawson
98
seasons.
98 to 203.
Is that five or four?
That'd be five, I guess, right?
Is that you call the golden era of America?
I mean, I'm not going to spoil it for people. Well, I am going to spoil it for people. The last season is when, you know, Pacey and Joey are living in New York together.
Oh, wait a minute. I didn't. Now you
six
spoiled
seasons.
It.
Six seasons.
What?
Six seasons. Right.
I know the season Ian Conn was on. I'll tell you that much. And, that made me excited. Very excited.
He wasn't creeped out at all by your fascination.
Oh, my gosh. Yikes. He was so creeped out. Did you notice that?
He was jumping out of your chair.
I totally interrupted the baseball conversation just to get it in. just to ask him about, like, what Joey and... And I called them by their character names.
Yes, you did.
Super creepy.
I think actors love that.
Yeah, yeah they do.
Chris Farley and
remember
Paul
that
McCartney.
Time? Remember
literally,
that time you did that thing?
I'm so stupid.
Remember that time you got caught at the airport with all that weed? Yeah, I don't want to talk about that. It was a stupid question.
All right.
Sorry.
Do we have anything else?
No, that's
good.
Mailbag next or no? Are we done?
I don't think we have.
You weren't here to do mail. You weren't here to do mailbag today, were you?
Oh, did you? Oh, we're not going to do the mailbag.
Well, who's going to read the mailbag?
Oh, that's right. Then give me 1 second. I've got to play.
Well, take your time.
No, please. I mean, is your computer still loading?
28%.
I have bigger things 38%. To do, like sit on my couch.
That was fun. I feel like the grown-ups left and just like left us home alone for the weekend. Yeah.
Is he coming back ever? I feel bad or is about this all it?
Drinking. Well, he's was actually home.
Is that the way we do it?
I locked him up inside. He's been back for a few hours, actually.
He's in the little house.
Padlocked the cellar.
He's going to be good. I threw some food down there.
I took him to the dentist.
He's fine. He's happy. He loves it down there. So...
How about the Wizards, by the way? We didn't talk about that at all.
Crushed the Cavs.
So why is it that the ESPN BPI says they're going to lose out on third place to Toronto? Because they
have 9 games left and 7 are on the road, would be my guess.
And I believe the tie-breaking game with Toronto, they lost, remember? That was a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
They went up to Toronto, 1-1 on
they
the
have
season.
To play, they have to play. So tonight is Lakers, that's easy. But then they have to go Clippers,
they end
Golden State, Utah. I think they have to play Utah at Utah.
Right, they do.
That's tough. Does the 3-4 question change if Cleveland continues to lose
And Cleveland goes behind Boston?
Cleveland looks beatable now.
They do, but they have LeBron. I mean, I feel like no matter what.
But I guess if you're 4 and you beat Boston, you might not be facing Cleveland.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't. Although, I don't know. Toronto, I don't know. It's wide open, is how it would appear. And Cleveland is just in free fall mode at this point.
There you go. Oh. Better late than never, right?
Wow, what did that take?
Well, that's a great last 2 minutes there.
That's really hot.
Great show, guys.
Yes?
Oh, I didn't know if I was supposed to talk anymore. You gave me that
you're
look.
Up, Tree Frog.
Go, Tree Frog.
Where can we find the show?
We can find the show at this show, www.TonyKornheiserShow.com. So, you can find them on Twitter.
So just to reiterate, for those of you listening to this show that don't know where to get this show,
it's at www.TonyKornheiserShow.com.
Some might look for a different platform
this
if they want to
unfollow.
Get our junk at shop.TonyKornheiserShow.com.
At This Show Stinks. I really like that Twitter feed. You can see the pictures of Pablo and Reali and Mr. Tony cramped in a one-room
shoebox.
Cell.
And he'll be back tomorrow. Right?
Maybe.
If you're out on your bike tonight, remember, do wear white.
you read, but I don't speak evil of the dead, nor special when they're stuck in my head. She may be gone only for a while. She's bound to come around 22nd mile. Yeah, she always returns in her own familiar style. She gave me those goosebumps. I can't control my mind. I swear she's of a different kind. She gave me those goosebumps every time I hear that soul. Singing all her I know to bring me home. I once heard loud and clear, she whispered things in my ear. No one could ever talk to me the way she did. She came back like a thief in the night. I heard her voice, I knew it'd be alright. She has her way of getting to me. I can't control my mind. I swear she's of a different kind. She give me those goosebumps every time I hear that soul singing all the right notes to bring me home.
She goes with me wherever I go.
That's right.
She belongs to me.
You know she does.
Don't you try to steal my heart.
Don't you try.
'Cause I know just where it's supposed to be.
She's of a different kind. She give me those goosebumps every time I hear that soul singing all the right notes to bring me home. Yeah, she's singing all the right notes to bring me home.